Hey, gang. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. I'm your host, Patrick Slattery. I am here today with Don Advo. Greetings, Don Advo.
Greetings, Patrick Slattery, and greetings from behind the lines in Mexican-occupied California, where I live, where I am in a kind of exile. So how are we doing today?
Oh, well, there's always a lot going on. There's so much going on. You know, I saw an article from, well, it's, I guess, from the Daily Mail, and it's written by a former New York Times Magazine editor-in-chief named Klein. What is his first name? Ed Klein. He's obviously a Jewish individual, nevertheless. Wrote a very interesting article about the links. The FBI is investigating these meetings between what he described as alt-left people, Antifa people, and ISIS and Al-Qaeda. We can talk about that a bit. There's also the Manafort business, where the Jewish media is trying to use this to reignite that whole Russia hoax business. Jewish media is also trying to turn the Weinstein Jewish Hollywood sex scandal into evil white men. They're spinning it as evil white men, and it's now time to tear down the white patriarchy. And of course, yesterday we were with Mark Collette, we were talking about, you know, the alt-right people in our movement and related movements and strategies going forward from there. I think you might have some thoughts about the alt-right today. Maybe we should start with that.
Well, yes, I do. The alt-right has been an enormous source of interest. And through the 2016 election cycle, and that interest has only continued to grow. Of course, we all remember Hillary Clinton's reference to a statement by an alt-right podcaster that the Republican Party had been taken over by the alt-right. I don't know if I used the term when I said it, but I actually meant it in jest when I made that statement. I was quoting someone else, some liberal columnist who was typical liberal shrillness and, you know, everybody's a Nazi and a fascist who disagrees with him anyway. So why does it matter if you are or are not alt-right? But that interest has continued to grow. And in the aftermath of Charlottesville and the continuation of other kinds of activity, you notice a real proliferation of mainstream media coverage of the alt-right. And pretty much every day I Google alt-right and click on the news tab just to see what's being talked about. And I also go to YouTube and search alt-right there. And almost every day there are three or four significant stories on YouTube's posting debating the alt-right. Dennis Prager, a Jewish conservative talk radio show host of many years of experience, probably goes back, I think, 30, 40 years in broadcasting, he has something called Prager University, and among other activities, they post videos on YouTube about several things. Well, there was a video about the alt-right, which is pretty misleading and pretty dishonest, and a lot of people have posted responses, including Ramsey Paul and a number of others, and it's very interesting. And there are others as well. There seem to be two general kinds of themes in dealing with the problem of the alt-right, and they specifically call the alt-right a problem. One theme, and we saw this on the Prager video, is that the alt-right is really small. It's like your high school reunion small, which was the metaphor the Prager video used. Like, you know, you can't even fill up a ballroom at a hotel. And then they end up by saying, if we're not stopped, we're going to end up ruling the world or something. You know, that's the reason we have to use this is a widely circulated theme among liberals, that even violence is justified against the alt-right, because if we don't their arguments cannot be met with logic and reason, and if we don't stop them, they're going to take over the world, and they're going to create mass murder and genocide and all these things. So you see these conflicting themes, this kind of schizophrenia. On the one side, we're inconsequential and too small to worry about, but on the other hand, we have some kind of magical qualities that have the potential to appeal to great masses of people and turn the whole world upside down. Therefore, we have to be stopped, whether it means punching us in the face or shooting us or whatever. I just clicked on alt-right Google News, and this is a sample of the stories. One of them is entitled, "The Alt-Right is Creating Its Own Dialect." Here's the dictionary. This in quotes. Another one that says, "Alt-Right white nationalists are fighting among themselves." The Tennessean, a newspaper in Tennessee. Here's one from RollingStone.com. NBC News traces the link between Gamergate and the alt-right. Turns out there's a conspiracy. Alt-right people apparently have taken over Gamergate and are using that to facilitate their attempt to take over the world. Foreign Affairs has a listing, the European roots of the alt-right. BBC News, Savitra Devi, the mystical fascist being resurrected by the alt-right. Washington Free Beacon, Columbia students protest alt-right conspiracy theorist appearance. Some guy named Mike Cernovich, I don't know much about Cernovich. WSB Atlanta television station, inside Georgia's alt-right groups, and they have a photograph of Sam Dixon, a well-known white activist lawyer of many years. Here's one that's really interesting to me. By Newsweek, the alt-right is using leaked NATO psychological warfare tactics. Were you aware of this, Patrick Slattery?
I have heard some about that.
Are you using those tactics?
Yes, I am. No, I wish I knew what they were.
Why have these not been shared with me? And I'm pretty upset that I know David Duke and Don Black and you, and obviously you guys at the top of the food chain know about it, and why have I been excluded? Some kind of discrimination going on here, I think. Tell me the NATO psychological warfare tactics that you use.
Yeah, I don't know. you mentioned a lot of things, and then you mentioned one name, Mike Cernovich, who said you didn't know a lot about him. And he is an example of what is now being called the alt-right. Now, this term alt-right or alternative right apparently was originated a few years back by Richard Spencer. It was something he used. And, you know, names and, well, Donald Trump in assessing his net worth, I think he values his name at something like, you know, $1.8 billion or something like that. I mean, there can be value in a name. When Stormfront.org was taken down, Don Black was claiming that the name itself was worth $30,000. I looked on a website that assesses the value of internet names, and it valued it at more like, you know, $150,000.
Right.
You know, based on its name recognition and the value of that in drawing people to the site. Andrew Anglin very early on thought that the term alt-right was of great value, and he wanted to fight over it. I mean, he wanted to claim it for what his website was trying to do, what other people were trying to do, as opposed to what people like Milo Yiannopoulos or Mike Cernovich were trying to do. And, you know, there was a struggle over the name. And in the end, people who are white nationalists more explicitly talking about race, but more than that, talking about the Jewish issue, won out, and the alt-right now refers to people who are not just racially aware, but are aware of Jewish power. And the those who are unwilling to take on Jewish power, admit Jewish power, are now the alt-light. They're called the alt-light. And oftentimes, you will see these characters on the alt light actively trying to sabotage or subvert or, you know, even get damage the people in the alt right. So there's, it's in a way, I mean, you could look at it kind of like the way the Tea Party movement originally had certain principles, among which was being against wars for Israel. And then once Fox News took it over, transformed it into something different with Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck, who all love Israel. But yeah, so you had this alt-right, alt-light. You also mentioned something about fascism. Somebody was talking about fascism. And one trend you do find in the alt-right is a conscious effort to what they say, demystify or, you know, destigmatize certain symbols, certain ideas. So demystify Hitler, demystify fascism, demystify Nazism, so that their use as weapons becomes neutralized. Now, it doesn't really mean that these people are Nazis or fascists or, you know, pro-Hitler. And in fact, we had the irony recently of Andrew England, who on his website has routinely posted these humorous memes, including Nazi imagery, you know, like a smiling Hitler, winking Hitler, and yet criticizing the Shelbyville, Tennessee march last weekend because some of the people there had Nazi flags. And he's saying, well, you know, there's a place and time for things. There is a place for using Nazi imagery, you know, and that is to attract the irreverent attention of young people. But when you're trying to attract middle America, you use American symbols. So I don't know. Those are my thoughts on it. So what about the alt-right? Where is it going? And what's, are we part of it? What's our role in this?
Well, I think it's rising. I think its power is increasing. I think our enemies tell us a lot about ourselves. And one of the things they tell us is that what we're doing is working. And we're getting our numbers up. We're becoming legitimized. And there was an article in the Jewish Daily Forward which says how the alt-right normalizes white supremacy, the Jewish Daily Forward. An article in New York Magazine 21 hours ago, this YouTuber is figuring out how to counter the alt-right's domination of YouTube. They say we dominate YouTube. I guess today YouTube, tomorrow the world, or something like that. Where's it going? It's going upward. As white people are increasingly coming under attack, explicit open attack. And this is being launched on us in a number of different ways. One way is just the open hostility and hatred that white people feel everywhere we go. A couple of years ago, I encountered some young people who had watched spent some time watching reruns of old 50s television shows such as Our Miss Brooks, about a high school teacher in the 1950s, Miss Brooks, obviously, and Richard Crenna, later a very famous actor, played a role in that, and they watched Ozzie and Harriet and the Donna Reed Show and Dobie Gillis and a number of these shows, and they said they were interested in seeing what life was like in an all-white country. Mm-hmm. And I said, what impressed you the most about it? And they said, well, you know, the girls didn't worry about feminism or any of that. The kids generally were very naive and innocent. They worried about school. They worried about getting asked out for a date. They didn't worry that they were going to be beaten up by blacks and Mexicans in school. They didn't worry they were going to be shot by drug dealers or gangbangers, and their teachers didn't hate them because they were white. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they noticed about Our Miss Brooks is that, you know, a scene of Our Miss Brooks would open up and a class would be ending and you know, the students would all get up and they would simply leave. There was no screaming or yelling or profanity. And they asked me the question, was it really like that back in the olden days, you know? You know you achieve some level of notoriety when people ask you about the olden days, you know? And I said, yeah, actually it was. Actually, I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, and not until my college years in the tumultuous 60s did I ever hear profanity or obscenity in any classroom, nor did I ever see any student, you know, defy a teacher. A teacher said, you know, please be quiet and wait until you're called on. We generally did what we were told because we knew our parents would back up the teacher, and the teachers were universally fair. And I recall growing up, there was none of this hatred of white children and white people that you see today, whether it's among self-hating white teachers or white-hating, you know, non-white teachers like blacks and Asians and Mexicans. The hatred of white children and the taunting and the bullying and the singling out for hostile treatment of white children would simply not have been allowed. And we see stories like this all the time where, you know, children have expressed a conservative opinion, or they say their parents are in favor of Trump, and they're beaten, they're attacked. In some cases, the teachers are leading this on. The teachers are encouraging this on. So there was a growing awareness that, yeah, you know, we provide an explanation for the reality that people in which people really live. Mm-hmm. You know, the reality in the liberal media is some other planet. It's some parallel universe. In the real reality where most white people live, it is white people who are the targets of oppression. It is white people who are the targets of racially motivated hatred and violence, except when the blacks and the Mexicans are killing each other. But, you know, that's a different story. I don't undertake to speak for them. So where we're going upward. Our numbers are growing. Our influence is growing. And you have only to Google alt-right, click on news, and read the articles by our enemies. Every article I listed was by an enemy mainstream media, NBC News, BBC, New York Magazine, you name it. We're coming.
Hillary Clinton quoting you in her big alt-right speech last September.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't think that was really terribly significant, but a lot of people did, and I don't think she really listens to my podcast, but I think people advising her possibly do, and they watch us, they monitor us, they listen to us. I think they've got their stethoscope out. I mean, I'm speaking metaphorically, and they're listening, and they're taking our pulse, and they're, you know, doing a blood sample, and they're listening to our heartbeat. They're monitoring us very closely, and they're very much afraid of us. Now, you ask, are you and I part of the alt-right, and what is our role? Most emphatically, yes, we are part of the alt-right, even though I don't think I ever heard the term until a couple of years ago. But even so, if it works, use it. And what is our role? Our role is to provide discourse, dialogue, a source of information, a source of advocacy for our people, so that our people can achieve moral and intellectual clarity. Until and unless our people achieve moral and intellectual clarity, until and unless they receive a rational and accurate explanation of the reality in which they live and a realistic assessment of the threats that are being leveled against them, we're not going to get very far, because no one's going to be motivated to fight back if they don't perceive a threat, or if they are told repeatedly and accept the premise that they have no moral right to defend themselves against that threat. Well, there is a threat, and we have a moral right, a moral duty to defend ourselves against it.
Okay, and we will be back right after the break.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to Angioprim.com. That's Angioprim.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
And welcome back to the show, National Bugle Radio, with your host Patrick Slattery and Don Advo. And Don, yesterday, at the end of yesterday's show, I had Mark Collett on from Britain, and I asked him, okay, when you regain control over British society, you've got this massive and very hostile Muslim minority there, what do you do? And he thought it was quite simple. He said they're highly welfare dependent. They're 4 out of 5 Muslim adults are on the dole, some form of welfare. And he said, and not only that, but he has said in previous shows how the British welfare system doesn't just give them equal access. It gives them priority. It gives them priority because the second and third wives are considered single mothers who get priority in welfare. That they have large families, and the large families have priority in housing. They're just given priority in so many ways. They're allowed to take advantage of. They can quit their jobs and go immediately on the dole, as opposed to a normal Brit who would have to wait for a year or so. They can go immediately on the dole because they can claim, you know, that some sort of religious exemption based on the fact that they feel uncomfortable working next to women, for instance.
Oh man!
So many ways, and he says you just reform the welfare system, you cut off the dole, and then also you make Britain, based on British law again, make it unfriendly to Sharia law, unfriendly to halal butchery, and provide them with a ticket anywhere they want to go, and maybe £15,000 per head, and wish them good luck. And he said that, if Britain is unfriendly to Muslims and providing them money to leave, that they will leave. He's confident of that. And it sounds pretty reasonable. Now, in our situation, how would, for instance, Mexicans and Guatemalans be as willing to go back? I don't know. But certainly the first step is not extending them amnesty through DACA or the Dreamer Act. What do you think? What do you think, Scott?
Well, I think Mark Collett is right on that. You cut off you separate them from the trough in which they feed, and they're going to go somewhere else where the pickings are easier. You know, they don't come to Britain necessarily to fight the British people. They come for the gravy train, and when you cut off the gravy train, they're going to go somewhere where life is easier. The problem here in California and in the United States is a little different. It's a little different here because they have a history here in the southwestern states. But even so, you cut off welfare. It's got to be a three or a four pronged response. First of all, you start deporting. First of all, you build a wall and you have security and you stop them from coming in and you assert national sovereignty. Second, apart from asserting national sovereignty at the border, you assert national sovereignty within the country. And you start rounding up the ones that are illegally here, starting with the youngest ones first. It is the youngest ones that are going to reproduce. I mean, I don't care about some 70-year-old who's lived here for the last half century and gets Social Security and lives in a little house somewhere. I don't care about that. The 70-year-old isn't going to have any more children. He or she is going to die pretty quickly anyway, and that's kind of going to solve itself. But I want the young ones targeted. I'm not even that concerned about the criminals, you know, MS-13. They really do less harm than the so-called law-abiding ones. It is the so-called law-abiding ones who are taking down the academic performance in schools, who are attacking white children in schools. The regular ones hate us enough as it is, and there's a hell of a lot more of the regular ones. So when you get the regular ones out, you kick out, see, fish swim in water, and you don't necessarily have to kill the fish, you just drain the aquarium and let nature take its course. So when they have no water to swim in, they're gonna die, or they're gonna go back to where they belong, and you've got to target the bulk of the population, the so-called decent ones, law-abiding ones. None of them are law-abiding. They broke the law to come here. They break the law to continue to live here and steal. They steal Social Security numbers and identification. They steal wages and paychecks and taxpayer-funded benefits. This is an invasion and a conquest, and it needs to be treated like what it is. So you enforce the tax laws against employers, and you start going after employers. And you start kicking these people out to the fullest extent that you can.
Okay. Well, we are up on our next break. We will be back, and we'll be continuing this discussion.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Welcome back to the show. Patrick Slattery with Don Advo. We were talking about the alt-right. How about let's turn a corner and go into Hollywood. You've got this continuing saga. Well, we had the whole Harvey Weinstein thing, where Harvey Weinstein has been raping and molesting women, using his power as a producer, his power to make or break careers. And, you know, right after that news broke, Tablet magazine, a Jewish magazine, a Jewish author in the Jewish magazine wrote an article talking about the particular Jewish perviness of Weinstein, and how this wasn't just because he was horny. This is because he is trying to humiliate and the goyim. You know, there was a Jewish aspect to it. And then, of course, Hollywood, which is notorious for the casting couch, going back decades and decades, and there's been much ink spilled over this, that you know, you've got Jewish domination of Hollywood, and that these Jewish power players in Hollywood use their positions to exploit not just actresses, but actors like John Travolta. You know, there's also a gay aspect to it. There are a lot of gays in Hollywood, and we have this recent revelation about actors Kevin Spacey having been accused of having molested a 14-year-old kid 31 years ago, and he claims not to remember, but he apologizes anyway. What do you make of that, Don?
Well, of course, Dr. David Duke has commented on the fact that the Jewish magazine periodical, I think Tabloid is the name of it, has acknowledged that there is a tradition, a history, whatever, a predisposition, whatever you want to call it, of Jewish males to be interested in Gentile females. There was a novel by a very famous Jewish novelist, Portnoy's Complaint, in which he had these weird sexual fantasies about degrading and humiliating Gentile women. So this is something that's well known in the Jewish community. They actually have a term for it called shiksa. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing, it's pretty much a Jewish phenomenon that hasn't, apart from a handful of publications, that really hasn't been that well noted, commented on. Interestingly enough, only the only Jewish publications seem to be acknowledging the Jewish nature of this attack on white women and the exploitation of white women. As far as the Kevin Spacey thing goes, that's pretty interesting because his response, it's like, you know, he doesn't say he didn't do it. He says he doesn't remember doing it. And I think that's kind of an admission that he did it because you know, most people would remember. Most people don't sexually assault 14-year-olds of either gender in any event. So it's like, you know, I don't remember every minute of my life, but I remember that I never sexually assaulted any 14-year-old girls, not when I was in my adulthood, in 20s or 30s, in any event. I was rebuffed as an impetuous teenager. You know, I guess you didn't get girls who didn't kiss on the first date or something. And I always said, well, how many dates before you do, you know, kind of not very chivalrous, I guess. But, you know, that's teenagers. This guy was 29 when he supposedly sexually assaulted this 14-year-old. And the fact that he won't deny it, he only says he doesn't remember doing it. Gee, somebody should ask him, what about all the other times he did it that he does remember, you know? So it's a very weak thing. It shows there's something very strange going on. Very good from our point of view, and that is you have professional sports is widely coming into disfavor, as in the National Football League. You know, you have all the blacks openly showing their contempt for white people and for our national symbols, and their ratings are crashing and burning. There's talk about canceling Thursday night football and canceling games. And clearly they're taking a hit for that. Now, Jesse Jackson has come out and said the players should escalate the destruction of an industry in which the players, rely for their multi-million-dollar salaries. So I don't know if it's racial or what. It's like the blacks have this weird thing about isolating themselves and destroying their own institutions. The NFL is 70% black, and you know, the black millionaires, I don't think they're going to make million-dollar salaries playing professional football in Haiti. And so you hear Jesse Jackson openly coming out, so vicious, so visceral, so reflexive is his hatred of white people. He doesn't seem to understand that by destroying the NFL, it is black millionaires who are going to be defunded, not very many white millionaires. Al Sharpton, interestingly enough, hasn't said very much. So maybe he understands something that Jesse Jackson does not. But you've got the attack on professional sports. Now you've got a lot of attacks on Hollywood. I guess George Clooney and Mark Damon came out with a recent movie, Suburbia or Suburbornia or something. Yeah, I didn't see it, but apparently it bombed at the box office and it's not doing well. And more, I read a lot of comments on you know, internet websites, to the extent that, you know, media websites allow comments anymore. Most of them don't, but those who do, I read the comments, and it's almost like reading the postings on Stormfront. People hate Hollywood. Rank-and-file white people are beginning really to hate Hollywood. They're beginning to hate organized sports, and they're beginning to realize that we are being screwed over. We white people are being screwed over. And one way you meet the threat against us is to defund the people who are trying to kill you. You defund professional sports, defund Hollywood. Now, if we could just figure out how to defund Israel, mm-hmm. Boy, wouldn't that be great.
Right. And of course, that's basically the strategy Mark Colette was talking about, defunding Muslim immigrants. Now, we do see some progress that Dr. Duke today on his radio show was talking about, and I haven't seen the news, but talking about ESPN is considering withdrawing from Monday Night Football. They're reassessing Monday Night Football because they're not making money. The advertising, I guess, revenues have gone down because the viewership has plunged. So there is certainly potential there. Now, with Hollywood, the strategy I'm seeing in the Jewish-owned media, Jewish-dominated media, is to try to turn this into a man thing, a patriarch thing. Of course, early on, you had Michael Moore, that fat old cat lady, who said this is a great opportunity to end white male patriarchy, white patriarchy in this country. And if you look at the PBS NewsHour, for instance, there's this whole hashtag Me Too, and they're interviewing women who in one workplace or another felt uncomfortable about something. And they're trying to turn this from a Jewish Hollywood thing to a white male patriarchy thing. Do you think they're going to have any success with that, Don?
Well, I think Hollywood is very, very different from any other industry because of, it's like if somebody's working for me in a law, some secretary, what inducements do I have to get her to sleep with me? I'm going to give you Saturdays off or, a 10% pay raise. I don't have the ability, nor do most men who supervise women have the ability to propel those women into positions of great fame and wealth and success. So Hollywood's very unique in that regard, in that the carrot, the inducement for sexual exploitation is the ability to make people, spectacularly wealthy and spectacularly famous. So I don't think that's going to go very far. I think most people understand, most women in the workplace certainly understand that their boss may have the same instincts as Harvey Weinstein, but there's no real inducement. There's no real, Harvey Weinstein can make you a world famous star and a millionaire. What can your boss down at Walmart do for you? The answer is not very much. So I don't think that's going to fly very far. I do think that people understand Hollywood is essentially inherently corrupt. I think that is too obvious to need to be repeating. The interesting issue is, will people continue the tactic, whether intentionally or incidentally, of defunding the enemies of our culture and our civilization? See, that's the thing that white people have to do. We don't really have to pick up the sword and shield and go out and, wait up in blood up to our ankles by slaughtering our enemies. We just have to stop feeding them. We have to pull the plug. We have to cut off the welfare state, cut off the NFL. These guys are millionaires because white people opened their wallets. Oprah Winfrey is a billionaire because white women opened their wallets or their purses or wherever they keep their money. Okay? Stop funding the people who hate your guts. Get their hand out of your wallet. And that's the first step. Well, that's the second step. The first step is achieving moral and intellectual clarity that you're being threatened and the belief that you have a moral right to defend yourself. Okay. The next step is stop funding your enemy. Now, there are other steps along the way, but in my view, those are the most important two steps. Recognize the threat and achieve clarity. And two, stop funding the enemy. That's the Don Advo theory of white advocacy and white resistance.
And I think it sounds very, very reasonable. Now, the last issue I wanted to get to today was we have indictments of Paul Manafort and one of his colleagues. Manafort is being held up as, I guess he's being accused of not having registered as a foreign agent when he was, a lobbyist for a foreign country when he was lobbying for various foreign leaders, whether it's Fernando Marcos or Joseph Savimbi in Angola, a whole range, and more recently, Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine. He only registered belatedly a month or two ago. And it's been pointed out that only six people have been charged under this law over the past 30 or 40 years, and only one having actually been convicted. So it's not something that's been used, but I saw someone, I can't recall his name, but someone with a Jewish name saying that, well, if there was ever an opportunity, if there was ever a case where you would want to use this law, it would be Paul Manafort. But, of course, we've got, you know, we have our presidential candidates during the presidential campaign will go over to Israel for fundraisers. You got AIPAC, which is universally acknowledged as the most powerful lobby, not just foreign lobby, but powerful lobby in Congress. They don't, in Washington, they don't register as a foreign lobby, and yet they are. They clearly are. So there's that massive hypocrisy there. And then there was an article by Ed Klein, former New York Times magazine editor-in-chief. He just published an article in the Daily Mail, and he's quoting a report from another Jewish professor at Carnegie Mellon University, who cites 91 cases of American electoral meddling in foreign countries between the years 1946 and 2000, including the 1996 Russian election, which was massively intervened in. Americans threw a massive amount of resources, money and other resources, into that election in order to shore up Boris Yeltsin, who was very, very Jew-friendly, who was otherwise, if it hadn't been for that assistance, and if it hadn't been, according to former current Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, he says that it's clear that Yeltsin actually lost that election. It was just fraud, by fraud, which he won that election against his opponent, a communist opponent, who nevertheless, is a new nationalist kind of communist, had said if Jews want to be Russian, fine. Otherwise, get the hell out of Russia. That's what I mean. That's the level of hypocrisy we have. And you have somebody like Eric, what's his name? Eric Swalwell, Eric Swalwell, representative from East Bay area of California, a congressman who was on Tucker Carlson's show last night talking about how Russia attacked us. They attacked us, not just attacked our democracy, but attacked us. So they're ramping this up. They're using this Manafort thing. And of course, the irony, of course, is Manafort's election advice to Ukrainian President Yanukovych was to play to the Europeans, to have a more pro-European policy in order to attract voters in Kiev. This is not like Yanukovych was never a Putin pawn. Putin always despised him, as a matter of fact, and Yanukovych was simply playing off the Europeans against the Russians, trying to get the most aid money for his economy, and he'd never a pawn. But you know, this is being spun as you know, Manafort being I guess the Putin's tool, Putin's pipeline to Trump, which it's nothing of the sort. Do you have any thoughts on this matter, Don?
Well, I do. There was a United States senator from Arkansas many years ago, a Democrat, a very famous senator, J. William Fulbright.
Mm-hmm.
He was a United States senator, I think, in the 50s and the 60s.
Yeah, into the 70s.
Yeah, into the 70s, served a very long time. And he tried to take on some of these Jewish organizations under the theory that they were unregistered agents of foreign nation, to wit, the Jewish ethno-state of Israel, and we need to start referring to it as the Jewish ethno-state of Israel, because the term ethno-state is coming, like alt-right is coming to the fore in the public discourse. People need to be reminded that ethno-states historically have been the rule rather than the exception, many of the largest countries in the world today, such as China, Japan, Korea, are Kenya are ethno-states. Mm-hmm. So not to mention the Jewish state of Israel, which is a very tiny state. But when you consider it is basically the ruling, it's basically the capital of the United States of America in so many ways. In any event, Fulbright tried to challenge, I think in the 60s, he was trying to challenge that. In 1973...
Hey, can you... we're having a little trouble hearing.
In 1973, he very famously appeared on Meet the Press, and he said the state of Israel controls the United States Senate. And said it, and those were practically his exact words.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
We are back. So, Don, you were talking about Senator Fulbright and his ouster from office due to having been not friendly enough to Israel.
Well, it wasn't a question of not friendly enough. He actually attacked Jewish interests in this country, Jewish power, in some fairly significant ways by challenging him under this foreign agents law that is now being implemented against Paul Manafort. Probably will be implemented against other people as well. But yeah, he in 73 he went on Meet the Press and said the Jews control the Senate, or Israel controls the Senate. And that was the end of his political career. A tidal wave of Jewish money overwhelmed the state of Arkansas, and he was replaced shortly thereafter. He was primaried, and I think Dale Bumpers was the name you had mentioned. It was the guy that replaced him. So much for that poor guy.
So much for that poor guy. Dale, and then Dale Bumpers came in. He was very pro-Israel. He's also had a close relationship with a young Bill Clinton.
That's right. That's right. I think if Fulbright and Bill Clinton were rather close, actually, and if Fulbright knew about the Jews, Bill Clinton knows about them too.
Right. But Clinton's never going to speak out about them because he's a sociopath, and all he cares about is himself, and has no concern to the immense damage that he has done to his people, to his country, to the world. He has no concern about that. Quintessential sociopath. Okay. Well, we are just about out of time. I am going to mention that once again, that article, you should be able to find it at nationalbugle.com. It's a good resource, and it's only going to get better. And this is the ISIS. This is an article in the Daily Mail written by, who is it? Ed Klein of New York Times Magazine. And he's talking about, in this case, maybe I was confused earlier, he's talking about leftist radicals like Antifa meeting, the FBI investigating leftist radicals like Antifa and their ties with ISIS and Al-Qaeda, and meetings that they had in Germany during the last year's G20, or this past summer's G20 meeting. We're just about out of time. Do you have a comment on that before we go?
Just want to say, I think we're gaining ground. I think we should be optimistic, and I think we should our efforts. The many seeds that we have shown are beginning to reap fruit. They're beginning to get results. Our people are waking up, and they're going to be looking for leadership, and they're going to be looking for clarity, and it's our job to give it to them.
Indeed.
On shows like this.
Well, that is the end of our show, but we will be back tomorrow. And Don Edward, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you will come on again soon and frequently.
Sure, look forward to it.
Thank you. And we will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.